to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Yes, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, powered by our friends at Quicken Loans. And it is hard to believe we're already through the first half of the NBA season. And one of the teams we're keeping a close watch on has been the Dallas Mavericks. It has certainly been very entertaining, a lively month since the blockbuster trade and acquisition of Rajon Rondo and him coming on board. There certainly has been some ups, some downs. But as they face the Bulls tonight at the AAC in Dallas, the Mavs are definitely headed in the right direction as they have won their last three games. Always a pleasure to welcome into the Progressive Celebrity Guest Line. That is Mark Folliwell, the Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer. Good evening, Mark.
Hi, Alyssa. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. And here we are at the midpoint of the NBA season, and a lot has transpired since the last time you were on the show. Help us sort it all out. I mean, how much has the trade for Rondo helped the Mavericks?
Well, there's a lot of really good numbers that point to the fact that the trade has helped. And when the trade was made, this was sort of my thought on it, Alyssa, that, you know, the Mavs were going to take a step back on offense whenever that trade went down. There was just no way around that. When you put in a new point guard, and we all know what Rondo's strengths and weaknesses are, that there was going to be a step back on the offensive end of the floor. But to me, that is easily compensated for how much I felt they had the potential to improve defensively. And so, you know, a month into this thing now, 15 games, I think things have gone really well in terms of their defensive improvement. At the time of the trade, look, this is what the Mavs were. They were the first-ranked team in offensive efficiency and 20th-ranked in defense. Mm-hmm. And that's not a formula to contend for a championship. I mean, it's a formula to win a lot of games and have a nice regular season win total, and that's all well and good. But it is not a formula to win a championship or even contend for one, for that matter, in my opinion. The formula is kind of where they sit. And through Wednesday's game in Minnesota, which was a big win over the Timberwolves, the Mavs are now sixth in offense and sixth in defense. And their three-point defense has gone just, it is light years better than what it was.
Right.
They were on pace to give up more threes than anybody in the history of the NBA. And now they are defending the three. I think at this stage they're the third best team defending the three-pointers since the trade. They've gone from opponents hitting 9.5 threes and shooting 39% a game to opponents hitting less than 7 threes a game and shooting only 30%. So, I mean, maybe that's a bit of a small sample size still skewing things, but just, you know, the overarching thing about the trade is I think it's made them better defensively. And things are looking up. I think, you know, the win in Memphis that they had the other day is a sign that this team is better equipped now than they were before to play with the big boys and do the kind of things that you have to do to win at a high level in the NBA.
Okay, Mark Folliwell with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And yes, you're right, Mark. I mean, we have seen a spike in the Mavs' defensive rating. You're talking about collectively as a team, they're playing better on the defensive end. But when you single out Rondo, I mean, where has been his biggest impact? Has it been on the defensive end? I mean, this guy is a rebounding machine as well. We didn't even talk about that.
Yeah, and he's helped a little bit there. Their rebounding, I think, still can be better, specifically defensive rebounding. Mm-hmm. But I think Rondo's greatest contribution is defensively. And it's not even that I think that his defense has been all-world or anything that is necessarily worthy of winning awards for being on the all-defensive team. But you can't get around him as easily or shoot over him as easily as, you know, frankly, players were when Jameer Nelson was the starting point guard and logging 26 minutes. And more of Rondo means better perimeter defense. It means he's on the floor more than, you know, guys, some other guys coming off the bench who might not have been as accomplished defensively as well. And when your defense is beaten by players off the perimeter, by dribble penetration, and that messes everything else up. And less of that is happening, so they're able to stay home on shooters more, and just a whole lot of good things are happening. And Chandler's there, and I think Dirk is making a, certainly, in my opinion anyway, I think it looks like his defensive rebounding is better lately to help kind of shore up that area. And just a lot of things across the board are better since Rondo's been here. And specifically, I would say that his leadership and defensive impact are first rate.
Mark, give us an update on the production the Mavs are getting specifically from the bench, because when we talk about this trade, I mean, wholesale changes. When you lose Brandon Wright, Jay Crowder, and you were just talking about Jameer Nelson.
Well, their bench production is definitely down since the trade. I mean, the numbers will bear that out, that they're scoring three or four fewer bench points. The last time I looked at that number, Alyssa, was going into the Wednesday game against the Minnesota Timberwolves, and they were down about 3 points per game bench production before the trade. But, you know, you're still getting solid play out of Devin Harris. They've got this rookie, Dwight Powell, who was considered a throw-in on the Rondo trade.
Mm-hmm.
He's played well over the course of the last month. Richard Jefferson settled into a rotation role and given them a player who's going to play 18 to 20 minutes a game and has been a really good three-point shooter. Villanueva has kind of gone back out of the rotation here for the last two or three games, but he was giving the Mavs a lift in terms of a scoring stretch four off the bench. You know, I think that there's no doubt that their bench could use. I mean, Boyd is doing his thing, too. I don't want to leave him out. Had 10 assists in the game against Minnesota the other night. I think, though, that they could use an upgrade on their bench. I mean, they're holding it together as best they can. They've got a great starting lineup. They've got guys who can contribute and help them off the bench. But if they had another body or two, I mean, certainly one, because they have an open roster spot, and they could use another big guy. And maybe if you got somebody else in there, I don't know, maybe there's a trade that is in the works between now and the deadline, a month from now, whatever. But I think that's an area that could stand to be improved with a couple of extra players between now and the trade deadline.
Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer Mark Folliwell joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And as you go through the bench, I mean, you're talking about Dwight Powell. There's a lot to like about him. I mean, fundamentally, he seems very sound. He's very bright, you know, a player out of Stanford, 6'11", 240. Tell me some more about Dwight. I'm intrigued by him as a player.
Well, he works really hard. You know, he's one of these guys that when you're not playing, I mean, you're coming over on the early bus and you're going early to practice and staying late and working with player development coaches, and that's what he's been doing. And look, he got an opportunity to play in a game where Dirk Tyson and Rondo didn't play, and Powell performed well in half an hour off the bench, played 29 or 30 minutes that particular game, and Rick felt like that he'd earned some minutes, and he's now through four games, he's playing 20 minutes a game and averaging 6 points and four rebounds and competing hard and playing a very, very high-level, high-motor style of offense and defense. There's some athleticism. There's a ton of energy and effort. I think that's the bigger thing. The energy and effort is what's so off the charts, and seems to be able to play within himself, you know, doesn't try to do too much and put himself in a bad spot by trying to do things that he's not really capable of doing. He's got a nice mid-range jump shot. He's shown a three-pointer on a couple of occasions, although I don't know that I want to lean on that consistently. But he's shown it. I mean, he had a couple in garbage time in a game against the Clippers recently. But I like him. I like how hard he works, and I like the fact that he seems like he's a pretty even-keel kid who is, if he has to go back to a role as barely playing off the bench, it's not like he's going to get mad and start pouting and grumbling about it. He's seizing this moment of opportunity that he has, and he doesn't seem like that the moment's too big for him. He's performing well in the limited things that they're asking him to do. So, you know, maybe this is just a nice story that is helps them with a placeholder until they sign somebody like Jermaine O'Neal, whose name, of course, has been rumored to be connected with the Mavs. But it's a cool story, and I like what he's doing, and he's helping hold down the fort in terms of providing some backup five and backup 4 minutes.
Yes, he has. He's played the four, the five position, 17 minutes against Memphis, and he just really does. I mean, he's providing those meaningful minutes, and he's just continuing to get better. The NBA conversation continues right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, as we're talking about the Dallas Mavericks, who stand 30-13 and are facing the Chicago Bulls tonight at the AAC in Dallas. We will be right back with Mark Folliwell, the Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer. And we are so glad you're along with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We want you to connect with us online at Twitter, at eRadio Sports, and join out or check out our podcast page at yahoosportsradio.com/podcast. And as we continue talking about the bench, I think one of the neat things watching the telecast the other night is seeing Tyson Chandler kind of, you know, working with Dwight. You saw him off to the side kind of coaching him and helping him out and understanding some of the things that's required of him.
Tyson's a tremendous leader. I mean, I can't imagine that there's very many better in the NBA right now. A championship ring and his competitive fire just earned him so much respect. And a guy like Dwight Powell and Greg Smith, for that matter, when Tyson Chandler has something to say, they're going to listen. And yeah, Tyson is, love the guy. Love that he's back here. And he's, you know, he obviously carries with him the responsibility of being a veteran player. I mean, that's really important and really serious to him. That not only is he there to provide leadership and win games and do the things on the floor that help you win, but be that guy in the locker room and on the floor and in the huddles and on the bench, supporting your teammates, teaching your younger teammates, showing them the way. He takes all of that role very, very seriously. And so, it's great to have him.
Well, how about that hustle play against Minnesota the other night in the fourth quarter? I mean, you talk about emotional and intense. I mean, that's going to energize your team.
Oh, that scared me, though. It's like, oh, it's a 20-something point game. I mean, it embodies the kind of player that he is.
Right,
And it was awesome. Running the length of the floor and diving after a loose ball in a 20-something point game in Minnesota did scare me. But it is who he is, and you can't change that. So, I mean, that's just why you have to love and respect the guy so much. Unfortunately, it wasn't anything that caused him any problems. Although I'm pretty sure Rick got him out of the game almost immediately after that. That was the moment when he realized, all right, your time is done for the night. You know, this game is well in hand, and we appreciate everything you did and do, and will continue to do. So it's great having him here, and that's just, again, that's another play that embodies his warrior spirit.
Okay, so as we zero in on Tyson Chandler, just talk about just how Rondo and him, how they're connecting and as they continue to develop that chemistry over this past month.
Well, I think that there's, the lob is still a part of the offense for Dallas, Rondo penetrating and being able to toss up alley-oops to Tyson. And I think that their chemistry, though, is on the defensive end of the floor. I mean, you got the guy at center who can see everything, the quarterback of it, the leader of it, who's going to be talking and communicating, and then you've got Rondo out of the perimeter, who's a very, very intelligent, smart player, who's great in terms of being able to manage what needs to be managed defensively out front. So I think Rondo, not just Tyson, but I think across the board, look, Rondo has a championship ring, and he's respected, and people know how tough he is, and the Mavs knew. Everybody that was part of that championship team in 2011 knows how important the defensive end of the floor is and how vital that was to his success. And they all know that Rondo provides that upgrade defensively and has that, the comparison is obvious that you're going to compare him to Jason Kidd. He's a high assist, high rebound, low scoring point guard, a throwback, if you will. And that's a lot of what Kidd did. Now, Rondo doesn't have the outside shooting ability that Kidd developed later in his career, and maybe that will come with time and work here. But the comparison is obvious to Kidd, so clearly the chemistry that Rondo's going to develop with Tyson and other guys as well is going to be there.
It's incredible. I mean, Rondo averaging almost 7 rebounds per game. So as we look ahead, Mark, I mean, what are the top priorities in the second half of the season for the Mavericks?
We'll continue to play well against good teams. That to me is the thing that look, I think everything when you look at the Mavs has to be judged on what they were pre-trade and what they are post-trade. And that not only includes all the statistics about offensive numbers and defensive numbers and where they're better and where they aren't better, but it also includes the fact that they could not beat the best of the best in the Western Conference pre-trade. And then since the trade, they beat the Spurs. Of course, the Spurs are resting 6 guys that night. They beat the Thunder without Durant, and I know the Thunder aren't a top 8 team right now, but we all know that their talent is top 8 worthy. They beat them. They beat Memphis earlier this week, and I think that was a huge win. So to establish that they, can play with the best of the best in the Western Conference and hold their own post-trade, I think that's a really important thing. game and a new point guard in the culture of their team on and off the floor, too. That to me is what's going on here. You know, you make the trade before Christmas rather than wait till the trade deadline, because rather than 7 years ago when you traded for Jason Kidd at the deadline and you only had a third of the season to work him in, you had two-thirds of the season to work Rondo in because of the timing of when they made the trade. So that's a lot of what I think goes forward for the Mavs, is that you just continue to assimilate him and bring this thing together and get it pointed in the right direction, and everybody getting more and more on the same page and coming together as a team over the course of the remainder of the season, so you're playing your best basketball when the playoffs roll around.
Hey, we are quickly running out of time with the Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer, Mark Folwell. And Mark, definitely weigh in on just the Western Conference. I mean, a quotable from head coach Rick Carlisle is, he said, you know, if you want to win in the West, you can't cower down to heightened challenges every single night. I mean, you definitely got to take care of business. And the Mavs got to do that tonight against the Bulls, don't they?
Well, Rick has a way with words that I don't, so that's good stuff. I think he also said that life in the Western Conference, I heard something about advanced citizenship.
That's right.
I believe it's something that he said as well. So look, the West is unbelievably tough, and we say that every year, and it's like you think that there's only a ceiling on how difficult it can be, and it's even tougher this year. I mean, Oklahoma City, granted they had all those injuries and everything, but this bunch is now over 500, the Thunder are, and even being over 500 and on a good streak, they're still three games out of the playoff picture. I mean, it's conceivable, once again, that a 48-49 win team, like last year when Phoenix won 48 and missed the playoffs, somebody might be even better than that this year and miss the playoffs. The West is phenomenal, and the Mavs are going to have to measure themselves against a lot of those tough teams in the second half of the year. They didn't play many of them in the first half of the year. They will play them a lot more frequently in the second half of the year. And they're going to have to, like Rick said, you won't be able to cower down. You can't if you're going to set a tone and be the kind of team that you think you can be in the Western Conference in the second half of the year and position yourselves the best you can for the playoffs, you know?
Outstanding. Mark Folwell, the Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer, has been with us tonight. Enjoy the game with the Bulls. And we'll see you here in Houston next Wednesday night. Thank you, Mark. Safe travels.
Okay, you got it, Alyssa. Always good to talk.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR. Okay, welcome back inside the Quicken Loan Studios right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And indeed, after a thrilling NFL playoff last weekend, it is time to give a forecast on the highly anticipated Super Bowl with the Patriots and the Seahawks. We are so excited to have back with us this week, of course, Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. He is our college football and our NFL analyst. Hello, Jason. It's nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing great. And I tell you what, Jason, before, let's kind of set that aside for a moment, talking about the Super Bowl. We're looking forward to that next weekend. But my goodness gracious, so much has developed in terms of the Patriots and the NFL finding that they used underinflated balls. What was your reaction to this? And Jason, I mean, how is this going to impact Super Bowl 49?
Yeah, I mean, shady stuff just continues to follow the Patriots organization around. I mean, it's kind of comical and hypocritical, I think, also because not that Robert Kraft was down there inflating balls by himself, but you know he tries to get in front of camera and talk about all you know the right thing to do and you know here you have some of the biggest controversies in the NFL over the last, you know, decade have surrounded his franchise, you know, and whether that's the coach, quarterback, whatever. I mean, I don't know, I guess, a ton of, like, you know, what would happen on the other side of the ball offensively. I mean, I've heard a bunch of quarterbacks that have come out since then, and they've said, you know, it's a common thing. I don't know if, you know, how common that is. I know Brad Johnson came out, said he had the balls deflated, paid somebody off to, you know, deflate the balls in the Super Bowl that he played in. But to me, it seems shady. It is shady. It doesn't seem shady. It is, because here you have, you know, a quarterback on the other side, Andrew Luck, and, you know, maybe he's not on the same page as, you know, the other 31 quarterbacks in the league. I mean, he's young, and there's a good chance that maybe he doesn't know this is what guys do, and whatever. I mean, you're always looking for that edge, but, you know, we always say, well, just settle it out on the field. And, you know, that's kind of the way that you figure out, you know, who's the best team. But, you know, you go out onto that field thinking the other team doesn't have any, I guess, advantage that you weren't privy to. You know, maybe they work out harder or longer, stuff like that. That stuff's all fine and dandy because that's kind of, you know, the mindset that you take is that that's how I'm going to beat that guy, is because during the summer and the winter and all, you know, when nobody's watching, I'm going to do all the extra stuff that I need to do. But on game day, you know, you don't ever think that something like that would happen. And you know, people are talking, well, look at the score of the game. Look at the score. You know, it wouldn't have made a difference anyway. And that's baloney. That's baloney. If there is that big of a difference, and it seems like there is from the quarterbacks and the receivers that I've heard speak on this whole incident, I mean, how can you say, I mean, look at just the one score that Indy had, and that was when Vince Warfolk, you know, kind of had the late hit there on third down. Otherwise, it would have been off the field. Well, you know, Indianapolis takes the ball, they go all the way down, they score. But just, you know, it's tiny little things ultimately over the course of a game that, you know, kind of change ultimately what the score is at the end of the day. And if Andrew Luck and all of his receivers are, you know, just that much more in tune, if he could throw the ball just, you know, that much more precise, you just don't know how, you know, one, maybe that next time they took the field and I don't know exactly off the top of my head if it was a three and out or if they, you know, got picked up a first down or whatever. But what if they picked up another first down? You know, and it's just tiny little things matter when it comes to winning an NFL or, you know, a collegiate football game. And to discount, I think, the effect that this could have, I think is not giving the game the respect that it deserves.
NFL analyst Jason Peter with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He's joining us on the Progressive Celebrity Guest Line. And for all of our listeners out there, I mean, Jason, you played in the NFL for 5 years. You ever encountered something like this as far as, you know, potentially teams tampering with footballs and an investigation taking place?
You know, I had always heard that guys, quarterbacks at least, they don't like a ball usually that's kind of rock hard. I mean, it's, you know, they like to deflate it a certain amount. I mean, I remember even at Nebraska, you'd see, you know, whether it was the day of the game or, you know, maybe the day before, the quarterbacks kind of going through, you know, the bags full of balls and working with the equipment guys is, you know, this one's got too much air or this one, you know, doesn't have enough. So I know that it is something that's significant enough for quarterbacks to be very, very choosy as to what balls they end up, putting forth for game day. So I've never seen or heard anything, you know, that where it was a result of, you know, balls being deflated. I've never, I guess, seen or heard of an issue where it has been an issue. This is kind of the first time, I guess, that at least off the top of my head, maybe it happened and it was just something that, you know, nobody really contested. But you were talking about a game here. You know, the AFC Championship game, ultimately, you know, it was a chance to punch your ticket to the Super Bowl.
The NFL finds that 11 of the 12 Patriot game balls were underinflated. And I just have to wonder, Jason, I mean, how the Colts fans, you know, and just the team, how they feel about this.
Yeah, I'm sure they're not happy, but I think everybody maybe who was on the fence about the Patriots and their organization, I think you know, that they probably are sold now on the fact that, you know, they're not I don't want to say they're not a first-class organization. I mean, obviously they're successful. I just think that there are a lot of shady things that go on within that organization, and you know, they obviously will win at all costs. And I don't know how interested they are in I guess the purity of the game.
What about what kind of penalty should take place?
What's that?
What kind of penalty should take place for the Patriots?
Or
be assessed?
I mean, I'd love to see them, you know, forfeit their right to play in the Super Bowl, but I know that's a long shot. Yeah, you know, I mean, ultimately, money is kind of what rules the league and draft picks, and you know, I imagine it would be something similar as to, I forget exactly what it was, maybe it was close to $1 million fine for the Spygate, plus the loss of some draft picks, I believe.
How about losing a first-round draft pick?
Yeah, I know. Not that New England,
hit him where it hurts.
You know, likes to pick in the first round anyway, but... Yeah, I mean, I think it should be something that ultimately, you know, hurts them. It can't be just something that, okay, we'll just write a check or we'll fork over, you know, three of our 16 draft picks this next year. It's got to be something that is significant, you know. Otherwise, it's like a kid, you know. If you don't punish them hard enough, they're just going to come back and they're going to do the same thing over and over again.
Okay, Jason Peter with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He is our NFL analyst, breaking it all down. We are so excited. Looking forward to Super Bowl 49, Sunday, February 1st. It'll be here before you know it. And I'm always thinking about, how do you prevent something like this happening in the future, Jason?
Yeah, well, you'd think that, you know, the way that it's set up now, it would be, I guess, it would be kind of safe in that regard. But
you would think.
it seems like there's some time there from when they finally, I guess, decide what balls and the umpire has to, I guess, take a look at them. He's got to weigh them. You know, but there is that time, and I mean, let's be realistic. I mean, once you get the balls to the sideline, even over the course of a game, you can play a series or two series, and if, you know, the quarterback feels like the ball's too hard, I mean, you can, you know, those balls are over there on the sideline. You got to be able to, I'm sure these guys can sneak one away and you know, they put a needle in it and boom, you got some air deflating out of that thing. So I don't know if it's just a matter of keeping a camera on the sidelines at all times. I thought they already did. I figured that they would be able to find something once this all was kind of revealed, certainly there was air deflated out of those balls. I figured they would just kind of get that video footage and they'd just track something down of somebody, mm-hmm. you know, taking air out.
The Deflategate controversy, it continues right here. We're breaking it down for you. Jason Peter, our NFL analyst, we're going to step aside for a quick commercial break. And then I want to get his thoughts on what do you think Tom Brady, how much does this affect in terms of his legacy and what he's been able to accomplish in the NFL? We're going to step aside. We'll be rejoined with Jason Peter here in just a moment. Yes, we're back with you at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. Before we continue with our conversation with Husker great and former NFL player Jason Peter, we want you to connect with us online at eRadio Sports on Twitter, and also we love hearing from you. You can always email the show at Elissa@yahoosportsradio.com. Got some great feedback last weekend from my interview with Dick Vermeil. Well, right now we're getting you set and ready for Super Bowl 49. We're still a week out from that, but we've been talking a lot about the Deflategate controversy and a look at the circumstances surrounding this. And my question to you now, Jason, is let's talk about Tom Brady, the All-American guy. Did he know that those balls were underinflated?
There is no way.
Talk to me.
Tom Brady, who, you know, is one of the most respected quarterbacks of all time, arguably, you know, the best quarterback of all time.
And the best looking.
There is no way that Tom Brady does not know if somebody is taking the air out of those balls. Or you know, it's just that is a guy who has had a football in his hand for God knows how many years. And this is a guy who's been obviously highly, highly successful. He could probably tell if, you know, the slightest bit of air was added or taken away with just his feel, being able to pick it up. So there is absolutely no way.
So what should he have done?
Not know that.
What should he have done if he was aware of that?
Well, not only aware. I mean, I would imagine that he instructed somebody to do that. You know, it's not like there was some equipment manager who thought, you know what? I bet you Tom would throw the ball a little bit better if I took a little air out of this thing. He'll thank me later. You know, that didn't happen. What did happen is Tom Brady had a conversation with somebody, and those balls just happened to have a little less air in them than when the umpire inspected them. Or you could go even more and say that maybe the umpire was in on it and he looked the other way. That would be a controversy for the NFL that they don't need. But, yeah, I would imagine it's just more kind of with Tom Brady and him suggesting to somebody that if those game balls had a little less air in them, that he would be very appreciative.
Well, Jason, but what about the colder temperatures? Doesn't that affect the pressure of the balls? But I have to say, it was a balmy 51 degrees at kickoff.
Yeah, I'm not. You know,
you're not buying that.
No, maybe if you're playing out at Lambeau, you know, in one of those ice bowls or something like that, but. I would imagine for the air to be a factor, a ball would have to be outside for a long, long time. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, like the football you have that your kids use, and it's in the garage, and you know, at the end of the season when you were outside throwing it, it was fine. But when you come back after the winter, you know, there's a little bit less air in that. So I don't know if those balls were outside for that long. I just think this is, it's pretty cut and dry. It's Tom Brady had somebody let the air out of those balls, and that's it. And the fact that he kind of laughed it off, you know, when asked about it on his radio show, you know, it wasn't like he said, no, I didn't. He just said, you know, oh, gosh, he doesn't respond to that sort of stuff. He's heard it all, blah, blah, blah.
Hey, Jason Peter, joining us on our Progressive Celebrity Guest Line. So I want to step back for a moment. Let's talk about last weekend, the huge comeback win for the Seahawks. What was the biggest reason why the Packers, though, why they lost?
Yeah, I just think there were multiple things that happened over the course of that game. You know, people could point to that first quarter where McCarthy elected to kick field goals instead of, you know, trying to pick up the yard for a touchdown. You know, there's the onside kick. There's the lack of aggression in the play calling on both sides, you could say, towards the end of that game. You know, and it's hard in the NFL. I mean, it's hard to win games, you know, each and every week, let alone when you get to a championship game. The other team that you're playing that's on the other side of the ball, they're a good football team, and they know how to rally. They know how to fight back. They've got playmakers on those teams, and you just kind of, you know, there was opportunities for Green Bay, I thought, to kind of shut them out, and they just kept that door cracked just enough. And Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, they saw a little bit of light, and they just ended up kicking that door open. And what a great game for fans to watch.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that was, That was one of the great games, I think, that I've seen. And but yeah, you know, it was your heart kind of felt a little bit for the Packers, because you know, for what, 3-4 minutes there, you thought kind of they had this game wrapped up and that they were going to be playing the Super Bowl, but wasn't meant to be, I guess. Yeah,
absolutely. If you're a Packer fan, it was a total heartbreaker and such a stunning comeback for Seattle. Just your thoughts on Russell Wilson, overcome with emotion with that win. I mean, 4 interceptions, but what a triumphant victory.
Yeah, I know. Most of the time when you throw or have that sort of game in a championship-type setting, you're usually not going to win. So I can imagine kind of where he was emotionally, and you know, just the rally from the guys around him. You know, he's a young guy, and
you ever seen a guy cry so publicly before and just show his emotions like that?
With it.
I thought it was awesome.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to see.
It was real.
You know, these guys that are real. I think sometimes nowadays, everything's so calculated. But I think you see that in Seattle. Pete Carroll wants his guys to be whoever they are. Do you know, whether it's Richard Sherman,
right, yeah,
or whether it's Russell Wilson or Marshawn Lynch, he wants guys to be comfortable in their own skin, because if you're not worried about what everybody else thinks about you, the only thing that you're focused on is what you have to do on that particular play and what you have to do to execute this play to success. And you know what, he's got a winning theory out there, you know, that's for sure. Everywhere he's gone, you know, especially, you know, you talk about SC or Seattle, he's been successful. So you can't argue with you know, the foundation and the structure and the culture that he has wherever he goes.
Outstanding. Jason Peter has been with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. Of course, he was joining us on our Progressive Celebrity Guests line, comparing rates to help you save. Now that is progressive. Thank you, Jason, so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
That, of course, was Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. A very special thank you to Josh Hamilton and Eddie Guardado, who's been joining us tonight. Mark Folliwell, the Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer, and Craig Bowler-Jack with the Jazz. I mean, Lisa Walker-Campbell encouraging you not to drink and drive. We'll be breaking down Super Bowl 49, getting you ready for Sunday, February 1st, next weekend.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.